U.S. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has announced federal initiatives to curb the use of antidepressants. He argues medications used to treat depression, anxiety, and PTSD are overprescribed and potentially dangerous. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss how psychiatric medications are prescribed and their side effects are University of Cincinnati Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience, Dr. Jeffrey Strawn, and Lindner Center of Hope, Chief of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, Dr. Tracy Cummings. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Great to be here.
Dr. Strawn, start by explaining, how do SSRIs work? That's the type of medication that RFK Jr. has really been focused on. How do they function in the brain?
Right. So the SSRIs, or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, are part of really a cornucopia of antidepressant medications. These include things with other mechanisms of action. But recently, we've been talking about the SSRIs. Now, one of the things that the SSRIs do is that they block essentially the reuptake or the recycling of serotonin within the brain. And so what happens is that we get increasing levels, if you will, or increasing serotonin tone. Now, it's probably a little bit more complicated than that because a lot of the chemical systems within the brain talk with one another, and it's really more of a orchestra as opposed to a single instrument, although we often talk about it as if it's a single instrument when we're thinking about these medications. They generally are medications because of multiple changes that need to happen within the brain that probably take a week or two before we start to really see some benefit, and then over time we continue to realize greater and greater benefit.
Dr. Cummings, what kind of side effects can these medications have for people who are taking them?
Sure. So when we're specifically talking about serotonergic agents, we think about that effect from a psychiatric standpoint when it crosses the blood-brain barrier. However, we also have serotonin receptors throughout our body. So for example, in our GI tract, some people then may experience symptoms related to nausea or things related to that system. And so there can be headaches, there can be sedation or impact on appetite, and a variety of symptoms that can come not just from where the medication is directly working, but because there are receptors throughout our whole body.
Mm-hmm. And so kind of nausea, headaches, drowsiness, those are some of the typical side effects.
Those are some of the typical physical ones, yes. I think what comes up the most in my world with prescribing is when families are concerned about the black box warning, which is concern for any increase in suicidal thoughts or actions. That warning comes on antidepressant prescriptions, particularly when someone picks this up at the pharmacy, they see that black box warning. People have heard of that, which causes hesitation, rightly so. But it allows us to have some just heightened conversations around safety when someone's first beginning a medication. We want to make sure it's tolerable, of course, and we also want to make sure they are safe.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And the first side effects that you mentioned, nausea, headaches, drowsiness, those are pretty common with lots of medications,
correct?
Right?
Yeah. Correct. And thankfully tend to be fairly temporary. Mm-hmm. That tends to fade out, but some adjustments may need to be made. We tend to start very low dose and then go very slow with mm-hmm. increasing, particularly in young people.
Yeah. Dr. Strawn, what about side effects that can occur when people stop taking these medications or stop taking them abruptly? I think a lot of us have heard about that.
That's a great question, and this has been something that has received a lot of attention. There was recently, as our listeners probably know, a HHS panel held earlier this month related to how to stop these medications, and this is also the topic of our recent book on deprescribing. So one of the things that we know is that when you stop an antidepressant medication, it should always be an individualized decision between a patient and their family, as well as their caregiver, clinician who's providing care. We know that when we use these medications in patients with depression and anxiety, that at a population level, when these are stopped, in many cases, we do see a return of those depressive and anxiety symptoms. And that's something that really underscores the importance of how we stop these medications. One of the things that's very important in terms of just clinical practice looking at discontinuing these medications is we often do it very slowly, much as was mentioned earlier in terms of how we start these medications. And that's really for a couple of reasons. One is that the brain doesn't like it when we do things quickly. There are various adaptations that happen as we start these medications, and we essentially get that same process in reverse when we're stopping those medications. So we really do try to do that a little bit more slowly. That minimizes the likelihood of some of these, what we call withdrawal symptoms. The other thing that's very important there is that it allows us to see maybe that fluctuation in symptoms that may result from stressors or external events, as opposed to whether that's just from stopping the medication. So really kind of disentangling what underlies some of those symptoms as we're stopping is critically important here.
We're talking about how antidepressants are prescribed and their side effects. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Strawn, you just made reference to some work that's happening at HHS. U.S. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has claimed that SSRIs can make people violent. Is there any evidence or research to support that?
So we don't really have clear evidence that suggests that's the case. And there's a longstanding debate in terms of the risk of violence or other symptoms or problems that can go along with a number of disorders. And so one of the issues is it's always difficult to disentangle cause and effect. Not thinking specifically about violence, but one particular symptom that we often see across psychiatric disorders is irritability. And we know that by and large, as we treat things like bipolar disorder, things like depression, things like anxiety disorders, we see reductions in anxiety that come with effective treatment.
Dr. Cummings, how often are psychiatric drugs prescribed for children?
Well, I don't have a specific answer to that per se, but if we think about the number of individuals who may experience a psychiatric diagnosis, so we have some data that about half of lifetime mental health disorders begin before age 14.
Wow.
And then about 75% before 24. So us talking about young people right now is very important. And if we look at sort of the NAMI or the National Alliance of Mental Illness data that has around, you know, probably above 1 in 7 young people experiencing, you know, a current mental health condition, the number of people being prescribed medication is considerably less than that. So if there was a recent article published just this year, and it was following data from 2001 all the way to 2020, looking at prescribing patterns in young people and in this antidepressant category and others, stimulants and other medications we use often in young people. And yes, the rate has increased. So it was about 5.3% in the 2001-2004 range and went up to 8.3% and by 2020. So there has been increase over time, but overall medication use in adolescents and young people is relatively low. Some data that's out there now is probably around less than 5% of the population being prescribed those main categories of medication. So if we couple that with our knowledge of how many people likely are currently carrying a diagnosis, it remains considerably low.
Okay, because the reason I ask is RFK Jr.'s also claimed that Americans and children in particular are over-medicated. It doesn't sound like the data really reflects that. What do you think, Dr. Cummings?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the medications are often a part of the treatment puzzle. There's a lot of ways that someone can receive benefit. We do know that antidepressants and other psychotropic medications can improve limitations and provide zest back to life for so many individuals. It's very important that we try to treat those that we can, but it's often not just with medication. We see significant success in studies that are out there with the combination of therapy plus medication, plus therapy on its own can be greatly beneficial. And I think it's not so much necessarily having to occur inside offices, but interventions for families and patients that is family work, that's maybe focusing on nutrition and sleep can cause some incredible benefits that are not just coming through a prescription.
Hmm. Dr. Strawn, I've heard that children metabolize these drugs differently than adults. Is that correct? And are the side effects different for children sometimes?
Yeah, so this is something that we've done a lot of work around. In terms of the general metabolism, once we reach puberty, it tends to be very similar to adult metabolism. And for some of the enzymes, so those proteins that break down medications, they actually reach adult levels very early on. So perhaps within the first 12 months of life. In terms of side effects, as I think Dr. Cummings mentioned earlier, we do see some differences in terms of side effects in pediatric patients versus adult patients. One of the things that we do notice is that there's a higher likelihood of a side effect that we call activation. Sometimes as we start an antidepressant, we will actually get a transient increase in restlessness or irritability that happens over those first couple of days to weeks of starting the medication. That's something that actually occurs at a higher rate in pediatric patients versus adults. And it's one of those things that does also relate to blood levels of the medication. And so I think that's really a piece of evidence that should compel us to start a little bit lower and to titrate the medication more slowly in pediatric patients. The other thing that I would say is that there are several of the antidepressants that actually have markedly worse tolerability in pediatric patients. And for those reasons, we actually tend not to use those in kids, whereas we still occasionally use those in adults.
Which are those?
So those would be medications within that antidepressant group. One is an SSRI, the other is an SNRI, and that would be paroxetine as well as venlafaxine. So the brand names for those would be Paxil and Effexor.
Hmm. Okay. Well, we're talking about how antidepressants are prescribed, their side effects, and what kind of impact they have on people's lives. Do you have questions or comments? Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So Dr. Cummings, what should parents know? What should they keep in mind if they are considering antidepressants for their children?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great place to start because we know the guardians, caregivers know their child the best. So when they are observing changes that's prompting them to have those thoughts, I encourage them to go ahead and act now and start to reaching out to a provider. Maybe that's through a pediatrician or primary care provider, if that's who they're most comfortable speaking with first, and not waiting until they see things worsen. I think too often there's a lot of reactivity once something has become significant or more severe. But I think when they start to notice those changes to start that conversation, it's going to be important to share any family history that they know about and even perhaps success or difficulties with prior med use and those immediate family members. It's going to be important to talk about any medical conditions that need to be considered as we want to be aware of any potential drug-drug interactions if someone is taking something else. We want to know their patterns. What is their sleep pattern looking like? Can we do some interventions there? Are we sure that they're getting nutrition? Are they safe? Looking for any co-occurring conditions that may be happening, substance use, you know, all of those factors that will need to be considered as they move forward. And it's a great opportunity to ask questions. You know, what are all of our options and ways to intervene now at this outpatient lower level of care before things may potentially worsen and need higher levels of care.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Strawn, is there any evidence that patients can become dependent on psychiatric medications? Can it claim that SSRIs are as addictive as heroin? Is that something that can be supported?
So not based on the availability of evidence that we currently have. As I mentioned earlier, there can be withdrawal symptoms associated with really many of our medications that we use, whether we're talking about medications that we might use to prevent migraines or whether we're talking about antidepressant medications, which is really why we discontinue these medications slowly and over time. As I alluded to, that said, most side effects that we generally see tend to be pretty self-limited. They tend to be more along the lines of flu-like symptoms when we see them. There are also some specific symptoms that we see with some of the antidepressant medications, things like people describe kind of a brain zap or feeling a little bit of dizziness or what we call vestibular symptoms as we're stopping some of these medications when they're done abruptly. There's also a more controversial issue around symptoms that may emerge much later after stopping antidepressants. And a lot of this comes from a number of patient focus groups on the internet and elsewhere. But that's something that really has not been well studied. Certainly, though, the having seen and treated patients with opioid withdrawal many times, there's a profound difference in terms of the magnitude of the symptoms that one would experience with withdrawal from an antidepressant versus an opioid.
Dr. Strawn, you mentioned earlier the federal government is taking some steps to discourage the use of SSRIs and encourage doctors to come up with a plan to wean patients off of these medications. You mentioned that any discontinuation of these medications has to happen slowly and under the supervision of a doctor. How difficult is it for patients to taper off these SSRIs once they've started? And do you think there is a reluctance among providers to help patients taper off out of concerns that, you know, serious symptoms will reemerge?
Right. I'm glad that you brought up the fact that patients have a role in this, as do clinicians, because I think there are often a number of beliefs on the part of us as clinicians. What if my patient gets worse? I certainly don't want my patient to get worse. I know the data related to relapse and the fact that these are long-term conditions. I think there are also beliefs on the part of patients and families in terms of hesitancy to stop these medications and maybe in some cases a tendency to attribute all of their improvement to the medication as opposed to the individual changes that they've made within their lives. So I think all of those factors really coalesce to make this decision to stop an antidepressant challenging. I think the other thing that's very important for us is that we often talk about the risks of withdrawal when one stops these medications. There's also a very real risk of relapse. When we think about depression, when we think about some of our severe anxiety disorders, we know that for many individuals, these are lifelong conditions that have true morbidity, that have relapse and recurrence repeatedly over the lifespan.
Dr. Cummings, you've mentioned nutrition and things like that several times. RFK Jr. is advocating a more holistic approach to mental health that includes exercise, nutrition, and focuses on therapy instead of prescription medications. What are your thoughts around that?
I think we do have to consider the entire individual when we are treating whatever condition they may be struggling with. And most times, it is not a pinpoint, this is the direct problem right here, and we can just address that one problem very precisely with one intervention. It oftentimes is going to be multifaceted in how we treat an individual. And I do think most prescribers would feel the same, that we would want to holistically look at an individual because food is medicine. You know, sleep does direct a lot of the way we feel, the way we think, the way we interact. You know, it has such an impact on our mental health. And so looking at things holistically, I don't believe is new in the world of psychiatry. And we know that also our medications are very important and very helpful for some of our diagnoses. And so it is part of our toolkit.
Yeah. Dr. Cummings, we're running out of time, unfortunately, but we talked about whether young people are overprescribed psychiatric drugs. Do you think Americans in general are overprescribed, or could the converse be true, that many people who need access to mental health services can't get it?
It's a great question, and I think in some instances, both of those may be true, depending on where we're looking at, what we're looking at that time. I do feel like in my particular practice, a lot of times I meet a teenager who has been unfortunately suffering for a long time. And I know that the consequences for those untreated individuals can be pretty dire. And I would err on the side of us trying to intervene earlier, because we can make a difference.
I've been talking with Lindner Center of Hope Chief of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, Dr. Tracy Cummings, and University of Cincinnati Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience, Dr. Jeffrey Strawn. Thank you both so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu, and Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.